Thanks for listening to this message from the life of St. Bees. We're a church that loves to empower, equip and inspire. And in order to better fulfill this call, we're currently undertaking an audacious church relocation project. Find out more, including how you can take part, at www.goandgrow.london. Thank you, and may this message better help you to live a life full of adventurous faith.
This evening, we are going to talk about costly worship. And so I want us to start with a question. What are some of the most costly things in your life? What are some of the most costly things in your life? Now, I don't want you to be really, really holy at this point. I want you to be really gut-level honest. Actually, they're probably the same thing, but when we kind of are faced with questions like this, we kind of get all spiritual rather than all practical. What's the most costly things in your life? Things that maybe are worth the most to you. Maybe they're financially worth the most to you. You know, is your car one of your most costly things? Maybe it's your house, if you've bought a house, managed to buy a house in North London. So now that your chairs are unshackled, why don't you make groups of about three or four, five, and be honest with the people that you're sitting with. What are some of the most costly things in your life? You can move your chairs. It's fine. The Lord will not smite you with his mighty smiter. Doesn't it feel liberating to be able to move your chairs? So these might be precious things, they might be expensive things, they're things that have cost you the most. Doing with that question? I know it's slightly ambiguous. It was meant to be slightly ambiguous. Anybody brave enough to give us some answers? Georgia, do you want to run around with the microphone? Who's going to be brave? What are some of the most costly things in your life?
University fees.
Yeah. That is a huge cost, isn't it, for an education now? Massive. University fees. Everybody goes, oh, yes.
I think, yeah, one thing that we mentioned was, like, savings. So, for, like, savings for future, yeah.
Yes, because whether there's going to be a welfare state, what happens with pensions, actually, it's a hugely costly thing to be putting money away.
Just having children is costly.
Amen, sister. I have six of them, yes. Mark and I often say if we hadn't had six kids, we could be driving around in a Ferrari by now. Although we might have got in it, but whether we would have got out of it, I'm not quite sure.
Not actually buying a car, but the car insurance.
Oh, yes, in London. It's just very expensive.
It's like the whole Stubbings family.
Oh, dear.
Time. No.
Are your parents expensive for you?
She is.
She got expensive tastes in birthdays.
Wanting to travel and following through with that with flights and the actual travelling trip itself, expensive.
Yeah, to go and see the world, it's a costly thing.
Divorce.
Yep, it is a costly thing.
It's all in the family town.
Yeah. Makeup for one, but also I have a very expensive mother, so.
I have expensive tastes, yes.
Okay. Todd, I should share mine. My hair.
Dying and cutting.
Yeah, dying and cutting hair.
Just had £300.
Work because of the amount of time it takes up.
Yes.
And what it therefore prevents you from doing.
Yes, so to do all the other things that we've been talking about, actually work just is hugely costly in terms of time.
And also I think rent in London is really expensive.
Yep.
I think Henry has a great one. Just prepping you.
Food.
Yeah. Yeah, women cannot live by value baked beans alone.
You're coming to me. What do you want me to say?
She prepped you, Henry.
You want me to say that?
It's all about being vulnerable at St. Barnabas Church.
Whether I really want to
see that. You don't. Oh, good.
We were talking about time as well. In a work context, but also time investing into families and time with your children or time with your spouses. So,
yep. Any more for any more? What, investing? Say that again, Jan, a bit louder.
Expense and cost have been with negative connotations.
Yes.
The kind of expense that you were talking about in your group is expense with hopefully a positive outcome.
So yes.
Time or money or whatever, well spent.
Yes. And I think the same would be true with uni fees. Actually, you're gaining an education by that. And a lot of other things, but there is a point in counting the cost, isn't there, of some of these things, for the good and the bad. So just to give you a warning, in a few moments you will need a Bible within your group. So if you haven't got somebody with one on their phone or their phablet, or haven't got an actual Bible. If you'd like to notice my large print Bible, they were taking the mick of me at church at 5 today because I now have to have a large print Bible. It's so much easier. so much easier. But just before we get to the Bible text, and don't worry, we're not going to read exactly what's on the front of the notice sheet because we'll be there all day. I just want to kind of give you the backstory of the story that you're going to read. So this is kind of David, the prequel to the story that I'm going to ask you all to read in a minute. And so David, we know King David had a bit of an up and down life. He had his great and glorious moments, but he had his horrendous moments. But what you can say about David is that his heart was always open to the Lord. He was always open to God speaking with him and God moulding his heart. But David was in a situation as king of Israel. He was king of Judah as well. And he, for some reason, wanted to take a census of all the fighting men in all the tribes in Israel and in Judah. Now, we're not told in the Bible why this was such a bad idea. But according to the Bible, it was a very bad idea. The guy who he'd asked to do it really warned him that it wasn't a great thing to do, but he had to go and do it because David was the king. And so he came back and he reported to King David how many fighting men there were available to him. And so some scholars think the reason why it wasn't such a good idea to go and take a census was that actually David at that point wasn't trusting in God to protect them as a country and to help them advance. Actually, he was relying on kind of what he had in an earthly way. So God is not very pleased with David for going and taking this census. For whatever reason, he wasn't pleased with him. And a prophet came to David and said, look, there is going to be a consequence to your sin. And you've got a choice of what that consequence is. And the first choice was you can have 3 years of famine for your country, or you can have 3 months of fleeing from your enemies, or you can have 3 days of plague. And David, being a wise king, actually, he knew the Lord, and he knew that the Lord was merciful. And so he said, well, actually, I'm going to let the Lord decide what the consequence is, because actually the Lord, by his nature, is merciful. And so a plague descended on Israel. And David was mortified because actually it was the sheep that were being punished and not the shepherd. It was David, King David, that had done wrong by wanting the census. Not the people had done wrong. And yet they were getting the consequence of it. And David repented. He owned what he'd done, that it was wrong in the sight of the Lord. He repented and he turned back to God. And then this is what we're going to read, the next bit of the story. So up on the screen, you're going to have two Bible readings come up. So within your group, I'd like you to read both of these. And I would like you to find the verse that it is the same or nearly similar in both of those readings. You can choose one person in your group to read it out loud if you want. You can all individually avidly read it if you want. I'll leave it up to you. So what we're looking for is the verse that is virtually the same in both readings. I should have some prizes, really. I'm sorry I haven't. Now, you may have found more than one, but there's one I'm looking for. We'll give you extra bonus points if you find an extra one. Anybody got an answer for me? Think they know what I might be? Yes, Janelle. Which is the same as in Samuel 24. We're going to put both verses up now. Very handy that they both come in verse 24. I'm sure there's other bits that match up there too. But in both retellings of this story, David is saying, no, I insist on paying you for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. No, I insist on paying full price for it. I will not take for the Lord what is yours or sacrifice a burnt offering that costs me nothing. So David bought a threshing field. This threshing field would have been at the kind of top of Mount Moriah. I think I'm pronouncing that rightly. Reminds me of Mariah Carey. It's the only way I remember the name of it. But if you had a threshing field, you would have put it on a high area. Because when they, I read all this, it's all very exciting. I've got very excited about kind of threshing fields and farming and all the rest. So they would, what they'd do is you'd have a big flat space. Often it would be at the top of a mount because there'd be bedrock, so they'd clear it so it would be rock. And so all the corn and stuff would go on there, and a horse would go round, and they'd often have threshing boards attached to the horse that were really, really heavy, and that would kind of break the grain free. And then these guys would come round with these, I think it was willowing forks, winnowing, something like that. Anyhow, and they chuck it up in the air, and because they were high up, all the kind of chaff would blow away, and you'd be left with the grain on the floor. And it was this place that David wanted, this high place, to build an altar to the Lord. And he didn't want it to be given to him free of charge. He wanted to count the cost in his worship as he gave sacrifice to the Lord. And there are two beautiful places in the New Testament where we see costly, beautiful worship happening. Why don't you turn with me to Mark 12? Mark 12, verse 41. Jesus sat down opposite the place where the offerings were put, and watched the crowd putting the money into the temple treasury. Many rich people threw in large amounts, but a poor widow came and put in two very small copper coins worth only a few pence. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, "Truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more money into the treasury than all the others. They gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything she had to live on." Costly worship, costly giving, costly sacrifice. Why don't you turn with me to, has got to be one of my all-time favorite passages, in Luke 7, verse 36. And as we're reading this, I just want you to have a think, because I am going to ask you, why was it so costly? Because this was more than just monetary value that was going on here. When one of the Pharisees invited Jesus to have dinner with him, he went to the Pharisee's house and reclined at the table. And a woman in the town who lived a sinful life learnt that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house. So she came there with an alabaster jar of perfume. She stood behind him at his feet weeping and began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. When the Pharisee who had invited him saw this, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would have known who's touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she is a sinner." Jesus answered him, "Simon, I have something to tell you." "Tell me, teacher," he said. And I'm not going to read the rest of it because it goes on a bit, and I'm just aware of the time there. Why was that so costly? I mean, we know that alabaster jar was worth, in today's money, 40K. That's expensive perfume. But why else was that a costly act of worship, an act of sacrifice? Yeah. She knew that she would be mocked, and she would criticize, despite that, she still pushed in. Yeah. And I wonder, she risked a lot. I mean, she must have known Jesus quite well to have taken that risk in some ways. Because she risked being rejected by Jesus. What happens if she'd got it wrong? What happens if he wasn't who she thought he was? And then he rejected her. She risked a lot. She had a lot of faith. And that cost of costly worship. Yeah. But I think it must have been, it's almost a bit like when we walk in church, isn't it? And we start worshipping God and the presence of God is with us. And just the tears sometimes just go, don't they? And I guess it partly was that she was in the presence of Jesus and she was just undone. Undone with his presence, undone with his love. And yet it's interesting that Luke talks about that she was behind him. It's almost like she couldn't come face to face with him. She was behind him and she was weeping. And it talks a bit about her shame, I think, with that. It's such a beautiful passage about costly worship. A question, I'm not going to ask you to discuss it in your group, but what does worship cost you? What does sacrifice cost us? What are we prepared to put on the altar? You know, I am inspired by our mission partners who take their kids overseas. So many people, that act of costly worship is going overseas into some troubled places to tell people about Jesus, to be his salt and his light over in those places. Costly worship. I know for you, some of you even being here tonight and some of you standing up and saying, I'm a Christian, is an act of costly worship. I know that for some of you, that isn't okay with your families, and you've had trouble brought on you because you have stood up and said, I'm a Christian. And that is an act of costly worship, an act of sacrifice. A friend of mine I know is so given to Go and Grow that when he looks at his bank balance, there is an act of costly worship there. Another friend of mine has invested a huge amount of his pension pot in Go and Grow, that when his pension summary comes through, it's an act of costly worship there. And then I had to think, well, where are my acts of costly worship? And for us, all of us, they are going to be different. I think for us, for our family, it has been going to Strawberry Vale and living in a community that's very different than, say, the community around here. It is an act of worship when I get in and I want to hoover the house. And because a lot of people in our estate don't have their own hoovers, somebody else has borrowed the hoover. I'm only inconvenienced, but actually that is an act of worship to the Lord, to share what we have with our community. It is an act of worship when we pay somebody's rent on the estate, or we put electricity on their meter, or we give them food, or we pay for their transport, or we take them somewhere and we have very little fuel left. You know, I always say to my kids, we are not poor. We have a roof over our head. We have food on our table. We have clothes on our back. We are not poor. But there are things that we'd like to do with our family that actually maybe at the end of the month we can't do because we've given to the people that we serve down in Strawberry Vale. There has to be a cost in our worship. There has to be a, You know, there has to be something there for it to be true worship. That's what David was trying to tell us. I think actually the biggest cost for me as a mum hasn't been the monetary stuff, because, you know, we have times of plenty and times of not plenty. And both is okay. I think the difficulty for me, and what I've really had to keep coming back to the Lord with, is actually the cost of my kids growing up on an estate. And their friends being involved with some of the stuff that I would want to protect my children from. I would want to protect my children from people that are struggling with alcohol addiction or drug addiction, or people who have had their children taken from them, and rightly so. So their friends have been put into care. And everything within me as a mum wants to protect my kids from that. But it is, as our family, our act of costly worship, that we are there to serve those people, and we are there to keep walking with them, even in their difficulties. And you might say to me, well, really, should you be doing that with your kids? I just want to point you to Genesis 22. If you want to flick there with me. Because something that I didn't realise until I dug into this story is the threshing field was on Mount Moriah, and the altar that David built was on Mount Moriah. And then Solomon's temple was built on the same site. And then Herod came along and built an even bigger temple on the same site. But there was something, there was an act of costly worship that went on there way before all of that. And we see it here in Genesis. Genesis 22, the story of Abraham and the story of Isaac. I'm just going to read you a little bit of it. And when they reached the place that God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and he took a knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord came to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." And we know that God provided the sacrifice. But that was a hugely costly sacrifice that Abraham was about to give God. I can't imagine doing that. I know this is, we have a very different culture and all the rest now. And, you know, you've got to read culturally into it. But still, this is the child that he'd longed for, he'd waited for. What have you longed for and what have you waited for? Imagine that, having to put that on the altar. And that happened at the same place. That happened at the same place. It was the same area. And God said that he would show him the mount, the high place, where to go. How open-handed are you with what God has given you? The Bible tells us, if you grasp and cling to life on your terms, you'll lose it. But if you let that life go, you'll get life on God's terms. Worship is costly. Sacrifice is costly. David felt it when he paid for that bit of land, the threshing field. He wasn't about to give worship and sacrifice that cost him nothing. There should be a cost when we sacrifice to the Lord. But God promises that if we are open-handed and give him everything that we are, everything And friends, the last thing that we often find is easiest to give is our money, isn't it? We kind of give him everything else, but often our people say that our wallets are the last things to be converted. But if we give God everything that we are, he promises that he will give us life, life that we've never known. So we're going to share communion. Henry is going to lead us in that. And I wonder, as we take bread and wine together, whether it can be a moment of sacrifice, a moment of saying, okay, Lord, what are you asking me to put on the altar today? This evening, we are going to talk about costly worship. And so I want us to start with a question. What are some of the most costly things in your life? What are some of the most costly things in your life? Now, I don't want you to be really, really holy at this point. I want you to be really gut-level honest. Actually, they're probably the same thing, but when we kind of are faced with questions like this, we kind of get all spiritual rather than all practical. What's the most costly things in your life? Things that maybe are worth the most to you. Maybe they're financially worth the most to you. You know, is your car one of your most costly things? Maybe it's your house, if you've bought a house, managed to buy a house in North London. So now that your chairs are unshackled, why don't you make groups of about 3 or 4 or 5 and be honest with the people that you're sitting with. What are some of the most costly things in your life? You can move your chairs, it's fine. The Lord will not smite you with his mighty smiter. Doesn't it feel liberating to be able to move your chairs? So these might be precious things, they might be expensive things, they're things that have cost you the most. Doing with that question. I know it's slightly ambiguous. It was meant to be slightly ambiguous. Anybody brave enough to give us some answers? Georgia, do you want to run around with the microphone? Who's going to be brave? What are some of the most costly things in your life?
University fees.
Yeah. That is a huge cost, isn't it, for an education now? Massive. University fees. Everybody goes, oh, yes.
I think, yeah, one thing that we mentioned was, like, savings. So, for, like, savings for future, yeah.
Yes, because whether there's going to be a welfare state, what happens with pensions, actually, it's a hugely costly thing to be putting money away.
Just having children is costly.
Amen, sister. I have 6 of them, yes. Mark and I often say if we hadn't had 6 quick kids, we could be driving around in a Ferrari by now. Although we might have got in it, but whether we would have got out of it, I'm not quite sure.
Not actually buying a car, but the car insurance.
Oh, yes, in London. It's just very expensive.
It's like the whole Stubbings family.
Oh, dear.
Time.
birthday. No, no.
Are your parents expensive for you?
She is. He is.
She got expensive tastes in birthdays.
Wanting to travel and going, following through with that with flights and the actual travelling trip itself. Expensive.
Yeah, to go and see the world. It's a costly thing.
Divorce.
Yep, it is a costly thing.
It's all in the family now.
Yeah. Makeup for one, but also I have a very expensive mother, so.
I have expensive tastes, yes.
Okay. I think Todd, I should share mine. My hair.
Dyeing and cutting.
Yeah, dyeing and cutting hair.
Just had £300.
Work because of the amount of time it takes up.
Yes.
And what it therefore prevents you from doing.
Yes, so to do all the other things that we've been talking about, actually work just is hugely costly in terms of time.
And also I think rent in London is really expensive.
Yep.
I think Henry has a great one. Just prepping you.
Food.
Food, yeah. Yeah, women cannot live by value baked beans alone.
You're coming to me? What do you want me to say?
She prepped you, Henry.
You want me to say that?
It's all about being vulnerable at St. Barnabas Church.
Whether I really want to speak.
You don't. Oh, good.
We were talking about time as well. In a work context, but also time investing into families and time with your children or time with your spouses. So,
yep. Any more?